Hello, hello. You're listening to the Goggler Podcast. Ian Bahir and Uma with you, coming to you in a week where we're all incredibly perplexed as to why Jeff Bezos's rocket looks like a giant penis.
Are we perplexed?
Actually, we're not that perplexed.
I'm more perplexed about why. What's the cowboy hat? Is he a cowboy guy before this?
Don't think so.
I don't think so either. Maybe he just needed something to cover his shiny bald head.
I thought you were going to say his shame, but he has none.
Billionaires are going into space, folks. Meanwhile, we're just sitting here watching stuff on streaming TV.
I can't even get as far as the kitchen.
But you know what? We've got a great show for you today because it's one of those rare occasions when we have good things to talk about and only good things to talk about. We've got Ted Lasso Season 2, which drops on Apple TV Plus. We're going to be talking about Kingdom, Ashen of the North, which is Netflix's special episode for their series Kingdom. And finally, Masters of the Universe Revelation, which is Kevin Smith's sequel to the original He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. First up, we are going to be talking about a show that all of us absolutely love. It's returning for its second season on Apple TV Plus. It is, of course, Ted Lasso. And can I just say this right here, right now? We were there first, folks. You know, we saw the Ted Lasso. We wrote about it. We spoke about it. When all of you people were like, whatever, it's a show based on a character made for a TV ad. Now it's like 500 Emmy nominations later, and everyone's writing an op-ed about how Ted Lasso's the best thing since sliced bread. We were there first, folks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Check our published date. That went up pretty freaking early.
Oh, man. I genuinely, there are a few TV shows that bring me as much joy as this one. I was so apprehensive going into season two. I didn't know what they would do.
Really?
I didn't know if they could keep it up.
They could keep it up.
Mm. Yeah, and that really concerned me.
Was that a soccer pun? Sorry. Keep it up.
Keep it up.
Yay.
For those of you who don't know, Ted Lasso is based on a character that was created for a series of NBC TV ads where Ted Lasso is an American football coach. And in this series, they kind of take it one step further. They bring him to the UK to, quote, a fictional Richmond football team, a fictional Premier League Richmond football team. So it's a fish out of water, 30-minute sitcom. It's an ensemble piece. It's by Bill Lawrence, who's done Scrubs and Cougar Town and who does these ensemble pieces very, very well. He knows how to manage a large cast for comedy, right?
Hmm.
Yeah.
But the thing about Ted Lasso that just really makes it unique and different is how well-meaning it is. I think we see a lot of sitcoms on television, and especially in the early 2000s and now, where the humor comes from being a little darker, being a little harsher, being a little mean-spirited even.
Yeah.
And Ted Lasso kind of dials all of that back. And this feels like a real throwback in that sense.
But it's also strange because when I've tried describing that to people the way you said it, and people just sort of get turned off by the idea, they feel like, oh, you know, sounds boring, sounds lame, you know, but it's this idea of the world is still as cynical as the world we are living in now. So everybody else in the Ted Lasso universe is cynical, is mean-spirited, is a little sort of douchey, specifically Jamie Tart, but but he himself isn't that character. And I think it's that juxtaposition that works very well in the sort of modern day sitcom landscape, I think.
Well, it's basically, can't we all just get along the TV show, you know? I was looking this morning, I saw there is an interview with Brett Goldstein. I don't know where Screen Rant stole it from, but they got it from somewhere. Talking about they wrote the second season before the praise had arrived.
Mm.
So it didn't really factor into what they were doing. But I still think it's quite interesting where they decided to go. Because that first season is Ted's battle against reality, really, right? It's just Ted's overwhelming optimism. And how will that fare in the cutthroat world of English football? And it had an antagonist in that first season. You know, Rebecca, like, she's the villain of the piece in the first one, first episode. this second season, the antagonist is football and time.
Yeah,
that's literally it. It's like the enemy is your however many month season and whatever teams you're playing against. And that's it. It's literally just that and facing, you know, how to stay up from relegation and the struggles of a football team. But everyone supports each other so well. They support each other so well and they just deal with issues in a grown-up, non-awful sitcom way. Sorry, sitcom. No, literally, Freudian slip, like a sitcom way where you're like, oh, they're only doing this so that they can have an argument next week or they can prolong some stuff. That doesn't happen in this show. People said, like, there is a moment where Roy Kent, who's like, I think becoming one of the best characters on television, he has to realize something with his relationship. It takes him, actually, he has to realize a couple of things. And he's very against any form of input. Or I don't think he's against it. It's just like quicksand. It takes forever to actually leech through and get into it. But when he has those moments of revelation, one of them's on television and one of them's on the training ground. And they're just like, they're brilliant because they're totally within, they're moments based in character, not moments based in external conflict.
Yeah.
All the external conflict on the show comes from tiny, tiny, tiny crumbs of internal worries these people have. It's not like, you know, he's a secret arsehole is his character a motivation. It's that he's a little bit, he's in touch with, he's touchy-feely, but he's not ready yet to deal with this one thing.
And very few TV shows actually pull that off well, right? Because when you think about it...
None. I don't think there's anything
it. Well, no. I mean, there are. I mean, I think the Aaron Sorkin TV shows come to mind. Things like Sports Night, West Wing, Studio 60, where, you know, the primary driving force of fiction is conflict, right? So tension, conflict creates drama. A lot of TV shows, like you said, whether it's a regular 40-minute drama or a sitcom, will force tension and conflict to create drama. With the Sorkin shows as well, if you look at something like Sports Night or West Wing, it was all good people trying to do good things. Whether in the West Wing, whether they were Democrats or Republicans, the Republicans were still good people on their side, pushing forward their beliefs. So in that sense, it's a very...
That show was highly unrealistic.
It kind of created this sense that this is how real grown-ups talk, and this is how real grown-ups act.
But also, it's also a great way of saying that there are no real villains in the world, right? There's no real bad guys. He's fighting for his beliefs and his rights. You're fighting for your beliefs and your rights. Whether you play a football match, whether you try and put out a newscast every day, or whether you're trying to discuss politics, there's no sort of villainy.
It's moral relativism. The show.
But also, don't you hate it in a show when someone who is a character who is painted as being rational and educated, when faced with a good argument, does not see its virtue? That's the worst thing, because it's so out of character. And you're like, no, you're a smart individual. That never happens in Ted Lasso. The conflict that is brewing between Rebecca and Ted in the first season, I won't spoil it for people who haven't seen it, but the resolution of that was absolutely beautiful. I swear to God, I had tears because it was so unexpected. I was expecting, after all of the shit that I've watched in my life, I kind of figured, I know how this is all going to play out. And boy, was I wrong. It was so good.
Also, I think the first season of Ted Lasso sort of demystifies Ted Lasso himself, right? He's not this crazy optimist. He doesn't live in his own world where he thinks unicorns and rainbows and there's no pollution, you know?
Yeah.
It never rains on your birthday. He's not that world. So
he's not Forrest Gump.
He's not Forrest Gump, right? He knows this is the best he can be, and he thinks this is the best the world should be, but he still goes home to his empty apartment, still has a drink by himself, and feels depressed.
Yeah.
And I think that was beautiful to show that this man is a real man, and that you as a person who feel depressed and have all these challenges, you can still have this outlook on life the way Ted Lasso does.
And it doesn't feel like a shell either. It's not like he's fronting. It's like he genuinely thinks this is his job. This is his job. His job is, he's in PR, basically. His job is to be up for the team and to get the team their stuff together. He has to deal with his family at home and stuff like that as well. But it feels genuine. It's just, it's a deeper character. They're just deeper. Everyone is a deeper character. I mean, I do slightly worry about Football is Life kid. What's his name?
I love him. Football is Life.
Danny Rojas. Yeah, I do slightly worry. Rojas. I do slightly worry that that kind of veers into what people think. His character veers slightly into that's what people think Ted Lasso is. Like, he is just like a puppy dog at times.
But I love that there's the first episode of season two sort of breaks that down immediately. You know, yeah. Like, he's immediately taken down. Football is no longer life. You know? Beautiful. I love that show so much.
And also, the writing is so smart that I think we were speaking about this offline. You know, Ted Lasso is about football the same way Jaws is about a shark, right? It's, you know, this is a show that features football, but is genuinely just about the people around it.
Mm.
Yeah.
And in telling those stories and in crafting those characters, I think, yeah, Bill Lawrence and gang have done something really remarkable. Like,
and Jason Sudeikis.
And Jason Sudeikis as well. It's very easy to get invested in these people. Every time I've, like you said, I do the same thing. If I'm trying to convince someone to watch it, I'm just like, just watch the first episode. I know it's a hard sell because people will be like, oh, I don't like football. Or, oh, this sounds a bit silly. Or I'm not a sitcom fan. There are a lot of people who don't like sitcoms. Crazy. I know. Anyway.
Because they've seen bad sitcoms.
I think so. Yeah. And put on the first episode and it gets them hooked immediately. There is something about the writing in that first episode, in the way Ted's ridiculously childlike humor, in the way you connect to these characters, that gets people invested right away.
Also, it works absolutely well on the flip side as well. I've tried to recommend this to friends who are football guys, right? Guys who are, you know, reading the Athletic articles and looking at stats, and like super hardcore guys who know names of football scouts and journalists who break news and stuff, right?
Who rename all the characters on Football Manager.
Wait, doesn't everybody do that?
No.
I mean, no, so like, even they go like, man, that just sounds lame. You know, what, an American TV show doing a football? And once they watch that first episode, you're right, they get hooked, because there's the sports element is not the show, you know. It's very good characters, and they're put in a place where they're football adjacent.
And the best shows do that, right? 30 Rock.
Yes.
Was not about
it's the not about show. Putting out this
the girly show, yeah.
Yeah, West Wing is not about politics. Sports Night was not about the sports show. It was just about these people, right?
The approach they've taken is that they could actually just all work in a factory. I mean, it's a factory where there are some prima donnas. Like, I think, it is in this. Yeah, there's one thread they do with Nate going down the dark path, and this is like, what can we do to motivate somebody? And says, well, we could show him his paycheck. And there is an element of that you can't get if it's in a factory.
I love that.
Where these are very well-paid babies.
Yes. Yeah. And anybody who's a sports fan will sort of know that, right? We'll have heard those stories. But the way they treat it here is in a very wholesome, heartfelt way.
I can't get enough of Ted Lasso. I mean, this is a show that really works on a week-to-week release. I know there's the temptation to want to binge all of it, but I like catching up with my friends every Friday.
Oh, no, I really enjoy just being able to watch it and binge through it because...
Oh, man.
I stopped myself, man.
There's a slight...
I only saw the first three episodes.
I've watched all eight that we were given access to. And I don't know, there is... While I'm watching it, it does give that slight feeling of... There is a slightness to it in a way. Like, there isn't a huge amount that happens. Like, there is some stuff that happens to the characters. There is some... slight evolutions, like they add this new character, the therapist, played by Sarah Niles, plays the therapist. And it kind of seems like they're going to add her as an antagonist, but it doesn't really go that way, but it also develops incredibly slowly. So I don't know, we've been talking back and forth of whether there's 8 or 10 episodes this season, because we can't see, the day before it comes out, we can't seem to be able to find out. And it doesn't really matter. You know what I mean? It's still just thoroughly enjoyable to watch, and the way things evolve is really great. And did you get to the Christmas episode?
Yes.
I think while I was in the middle, I was like, this is one of those things that you really, like, your brain goes off at the back going like, oh my God, you're watching like what's going to become a Christmas tradition for the first time in the middle of July. Yeah. And it's going to broadcast in the middle of July/August. And it's like, okay, sure, why not? Put the best Christmas episode of any TV show of the last 20 years
Yeah.
On Apple TV Plus in the middle of summer. Why not?
Actually, I'm glad you guys have seen it because, you know, I don't know how much, I don't know if there's an embargo date on the Christmas episode. I don't know how much we're allowed to talk about it. Okay, so there we're not going to review it.
I'm just saying there's a Christmas episode and it's heartwarming.
Yeah.
But just to do that as well, to have an episode that is actually removed from the primary storyline in a way, but still have all of this character development happening. Mm. It's so smart. That's all I'll say. I don't want to break any embargoes. But no, I have to say, the other thing about Ted Lasso, you mentioned the slow burn, Ian, with the therapist character, but that's something I really enjoyed about the first season as well, where the supposed conflicts were slow burned throughout the season. Mm. So the relationship between Roy and Jamie, it's always developing and they're always kind of going back and forth between being frenemies. But it's amazing at the end of the season how it all comes to a head on the pitch. And all of that's built up slowly. Rebecca and her ex-husband, Rupert, their conflict in the and how it builds up and how it comes to a head in the bar over a darts game. I mean, all of that is earned because of that slow burn. And it's just such great writing. And Bill Lawrence used to do that on Scrubs as well, right? He would set something up in one episode and you would think every episode of Scrubs is pretty much standalone, but he would keep revisiting those tropes and those themes over and over again.
Yeah, well, there is payoffs to certain things later this season that are coming from the first season that are absolutely amazing. Just like the emotion you get from it and the way this paid off and the characters who end up helping each other. It is just like, it's a kind of a, it's almost Darkest Before the Dawn moment. It's just, they play everything. I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. It's one of the later episodes, so you'll enjoy it further on. But when it comes at you, it's just that good-natured feeling it's built up is one thing, but the real drama is there. I don't know, these are, to go back to what you're saying about Ted Lasso being a real character, like they play off an awful lot of things. He's not involved in the moment I'm talking about, but he's not involved for reasons that are deeply ingrained in his character and will add an entirely new dimension to his character when you get to them.
Nice.
Right.
Also, forgot to mention, it's really funny. Like it's a sitcom and it's really funny.
Yeah.
There are genuine laugh out loud moments that come from character moments, right?
I mean, if you haven't seen it, obviously, hang on. You haven't seen it, but the appearance of Ted Lasso's personality, in air quotes, is beautiful.
His Tyler Durden, let's say.
Led Tasso.
Yes.
I was very tickled by all the TV shows, the English TV shows. Like, I mean, I do wonder, like, considering the global popularity of the show, like, are people watching this all over the world wondering who the fuck is that when they see Ted Philip Schofield?
You will know. I think you will know. I think you will. I've never seen the show, but I know those two.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. You would. Their names have sort of gone to that level of Katie Couric, where we don't get it carried here in Malaysia, but you know those names.
There's a football show that appears that I was amazed that they did.
Yeah. Oh, that was really cool.
And also, and it's the actual guys. Like, they're not professional actors, it's insane.
Which you can tell.
But that's a testament to the show, right? I mean, the show's gotten so big that now even their marketing and promotional material features real clubs, real players. Mm. Even for the first season, right? Didn't Ted have a phone call with Alex Ferguson?
No, he had a phone call with Jose.
Oh, he had a phone call with Mourinho.
Yeah.
Even the early promotional stuff.
It's all completely over my head because my knowledge of football is receding even further into the past. But I'm sure we'll have to check up again to see. I'll have to check by here. Which ones are real footballers and which matches? Because there are some in there. I just don't know which ones are real and which ones are superposed.
So I will say the clubs are all accurate, right? Man City, Nottingham Forest, Norwich.
There's somewhere it's like, you know, if you're seeing Man City, I think last season there was some shots of Man City players that were Man City players with Jamie, right? There's like, it was a moment between players. It's like, if it's a moment on screen where one character is saying something to another, to someone you've never met before from another football team, you're pretty much guaranteed that's an actual football player. But when they're lining out, say, before going onto the pitch, you might be not sure or whatever. Or there's a referee who turns up, and I'm pretty sure that's probably a real referee as well, right?
Oh, man, I'm so excited now. Because I've only seen the first three episodes, and what you're telling me now, I'm just like, oh, my God. Also, I just like, you're so used to TV shows faking these stuff, right? Mm. They fake it, you know, they don't have CNN, they have GNN, you know, they don't ever really try and cross the divide into reality. Whereas here, these guys are playing football against real football teams, right? I mean, in the first episode, they're playing a match against Nottingham Forest. I'll be honest, I don't know any of the players, so I'm not sure if those are real players on the field.
Right.
But, you know, it's still pretty freaking cool. You know? I will also say I appreciate that the players that Ted Lasso has on his team, the AFC Richmond players, look like they know how to kick a ball.
Yeah.
That's always been my bugbear, you know. This, you know, like the Goal series of movies, Goal 1, 2, and 3, where they supposedly found this South American phenom and he can't fucking kick a ball. And like, how is he going to the World Cup? There's no way Real Madrid are going to sign him.
Yeah.
These guys, like Danny Rojas looks like a striker. He can actually kick the ball like an actual footballer. And I mean, for me, that's a little thing, but it's an important thing.
Yeah.
It goes a long way to make it believable, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
I bring it up again because we were not sure. I'm still looking for classic movie selection and all the streaming services seem to be disappearing. So we did watch Swatu Kitika and was amazed at how good the football looked in that again.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They show exactly how, as much as it is, I don't think Ted Lasso was taking notes, but it is an example of like just the right amount of the sport you're talking about to get across the emotional beats that you want, right? It's not like, oh, great, here's another football match. It's like, oh, great, here's another football match.
And that's coming from you who's not a football fan, right, Ian? And I think it's telling something when you can get other people who are not fans of a sport or a thing into that thing. And I think the show does that amazingly well.
I'm reconsidering getting that AFC Richmond t-shirt that they've launched in the
store. Oh, man, I want an AFC Richmond t-shirt so badly.
Wait. They have an official AFC Richmond t-shirt?
I said it. I put it in the Slack. It just goes to show you.
I missed that.
You can get AFC Richmond jerseys, bro.
And you can get you can get them personalized as well. So you can get Roy Kent on the back or you can get your own name.
Oh, man, I want a Roy Kent jersey.
I think they have I don't know if they have the jackets, which you can't see the stream, but the coaching jackets, which are up now. But they do have athletic wear that looks like the stuff from the show.
Ooh, oh, so nice. Good. Yeah. I want one of those.
Ted Lasso season 2 drops on Apple TV Plus, or actually would have dropped on Apple TV Plus by the time you listen to this podcast. New episodes every Friday. And if you haven't seen season 1, all of that's already available still. So we recommend that you go and watch it. It's 10 episodes, 30 minutes each. It's completely bingeable and you will be done in about 5 hours. Although you won't want to be, because then you would miss your friends. So, yeah. Okay, up next, we're going to be talking about the special episode that Netflix has just dropped for their series Kingdom. It's not season 3. We still have no news on season 3, mind you.
Hang on, jump again. Is there a season 3?
We don't know. And they had a junket, and in the instructions, they were like, do not talk about season 3. Or do not ask about season 3, so...
My t-shirt saying, do not ask me about season three is answering a lot of these questions. Yeah. It's already answering a lot of these questions.
But because like I think it's fair to say of the three of us, I'm the only one who've seen season 2.
You've seen all of it, yeah.
I've seen none of it. And Uma, you've seen one of it.
Season 2 ends. Like there is an ending.
Right.
Oh?
Yeah. Season 2, there's an ending to season 2.
But there's no cliffhanger involving Ashen of the North?
I don't know if it's a cliffhanger. They literally just introduce her face.
Well, okay, so that's interesting because, because this show or this 90-minute special, if you will.
I think the actual Netflix call it a Netflix special episode, which makes it sound like it's going to be one of those, you know, like Clone High. It's like one of those on this very special episode, which always sounds like it's going to be about drugs.
We talk about drugs. Yeah.
And isn't it really, in a way, really about ginseng?
It is, right? About special ginseng. No. Well, it's a weird episode, right? Because it's like it's kind of like an origin story of Ashen. It's a bit of The Ghost in the Darkness, and it's a bit Fear the Walking Dead, but in a good way.
Hmm.
And it's interesting you say that they just show her face, Bahe, because all of this 90 minutes kind of sets her up as a formidable character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, she is fucking badass.
Knowing just some, only a time to Wikipedia scan through, like, the show Kingdom. But Kingdom is basically, the king's a bit ill, there's a plague in the in town, and things might be connected, and then they are. And there's fights. There are big samurai wushu style fights, but only Korean wushu, right?
Yeah. There's big sort of big zombie horde type stuff, like big zombie horde type stuff, and it's great. They do some really good zombie horde.
And there's a group of disparate heroes come together to try and survive and also fight back the darkness.
They don't survive and fight back the darkness is a good way of saying it. Yeah.
But also, I guess when we talk about zombie shows and we talk about the whole metaphors to reality thing, this one's all about politics and class structure, right?
Yeah.
So if you watch the first season now, Ian, like, it's surprisingly prescient with regards to how everyone's kind of handled the pandemic.
Oh, yes.
Like the way the plague unfolds and people talk about it and people in power hide it.
Yeah, I saw a lot of rich family takes the corpse of their dead child with them instead of burning it and taking its head off kind of crap. Yeah. You fools!
You know, for me, Kingdom was one of the better zombie franchises products to come out in recent years because it was something genuinely new and interesting. I don't see much zombie stuff in Korea. I mean, the Train to Busan stuff, and then they did another one recently. Netflix had another movie, and I can't remember what it's called now, which came out about 6 to 8 months ago.
The one in the apartment block.
Yeah. Yes. And all of those are more modern takes. So it was really cool to see this like medieval take on zombies. Mm. And the production and the writing is all very good because... So all three seasons... both seasons and this special episode, all directed, written by the same person... Or the same people, sorry. And what's cool about it is that it's telling this medieval period piece, which happens to have zombies in it, and that causes the conflict. So that writing, I thought, is really solid because you still see the whole interactions between king and people. And it's very, very cool.
I've not watched any of the show, but I'm pretty clued up on the difference on what the conflict is between the Pijawi Jurchens and the nation of Joseon and everyone else who's involved and what's going on there. And it does it quite well with regards to, I don't know if it's a translation thing, but there's like, you know, can we get an official position on things? And it's like, oh, okay, that's enough. I understand what's going on there enough.
Yeah.
And it's about immigration really as well.
Yeah. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Uma, I haven't seen it in a long time, but even the first couple of, the seasons 1 and 2, there is a fairly big immigration storyline.
Yes.
There's a fairly big storyline about how was the virus brought by people from a different country, from a different village? Did they bring it to us? So that metaphor is very strong throughout the first two seasons. Yeah.
Can I also say, if you want to do zombie animals, this is how you do it.
This is how you do it.
Screw you, Zack Snyder. Looks better. Zombie tiger looks better.
Shit, that whole sequence was fucking cool.
That was great sequence.
The one that's like the Jurassic World one where they're out in the long grass?
Yeah.
Yeah. Does the original series go into the cause of the outbreak?
No.
Do they find it? They don't find it in the show at all. Okay, that's interesting. Yeah.
But so at the end of season 2, there's the introduction of the flower.
Mm. Yes.
And that's it.
Yeah.
There's no explanation of the flower. There's a little bit of explanation on the flower. And I think that's where they introduced Ashin.
Right. I was just going to say, we didn't mention the word. We said it. We said, you know, origin story, but we didn't mention the word prequel. This one actually takes place before all of that.
Before everything. Yeah.
Or leading up to it. Yeah. Because, knowing nothing about it, I thought that Ashin was one of the heroes of the show. And I thought like, oh, this is cool. I guess they're doing like, you know, what did Daryl do before he was, you know, in The Walking Dead?
Yeah.
No, it's not that at all. Yeah. It's a completely new character. And I think it works on its own. Like, it really did work for me.
Absolutely. Yeah.
There are twists and turns that goes on. Even Netflix didn't give us the full cast list name, so I don't have the names of everybody. So like, there's the local Joseon admin guy.
Yeah.
Mm.
Who's kind of like half, you know, office manager, half sword ninja, arrow ninja, cool.
Like badass.
Hero of legend, sorry. And there's revelations around him that you're like, oh, fuck. Like, I don't know any of these characters from anything. It would seem like he's got, because some people leave, I would assume they've gone, we have to go to the main series and we will meet you there kind of thing. And I don't know if that's happening or not, but it is, you know, medieval-ish Korean Batman, basically. if they were darker, even darker than Batman.
I mean, it's a bit of a slow burn before we get to see the first actual zombie, but when that happens...
No, you get a zombie fucking deer in the opening minutes, man. Well, that's like, okay, I've not seen that before.
That is pretty cool too.
No, but I think that's where you have to be very careful about this one, because it's not really a zombie movie. You know what I mean? Like, that it's not really...
It's not set up act two, boom, hordes, right? And then act three, try to find a resolution. No, it's not that.
But it works with that. But it even works without that. Like, there's the political intrigue of, like, there's a whole load of a particular race found dead. And it's like, if it's pinned on one country, because you don't want to have, I think, what was it, 10,000 Pajon Jurkens are the worst type of people to piss off.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. That's all they need to take.
All they need is if there's 9,999 of them and they're mad at you, you're safe. One more, fuck. Game over, man. So but that political intrigue I found interesting. Like, I have not seen Kingdom, so I hadn't seen anything like it, and it was interesting enough. And all these characters staring resolutely at each other and noticing there's a bead missing from his hat.
Yes.
Like,
yeah. Oh no, but all of that is in Kingdom 1 and 2.
Yes, and I think that's what makes Kingdom 1 and 2 so good, because the focus of the show is still the political intrigue.
Mm. Yes, it's not about this zombie horde coming after you. That just breaks up the mood, but it's not the point of the show. And I think
that said, at the end of this, when the zombie horde happens, it is cool. Oof. It is great. I wasn't sure what she was going to do with the arrow at the end there, but I'm really glad she did what she did.
Yeah.
But I will say that works throughout Kingdom 1 and 2. The way they do the horde, like, there's some beautiful imagery of zombies just killing people, just like moments of just pause. And you think there's that one sequence where one of the guards goes to bed late.
Oh, yeah. All right, I think he's coming back from the jacks. He went to the toilet.
Or something, yeah. And then, but the end of that sequence, right? Like, murdered.
When they cut back to it later.
Where they cut back
through the door frame.
Everybody's on him. That's beautiful, but that was mirrored. There's a mirror to that in season 2, I think. And I used it for one of the pictures. I used it for the picture on our sort of... MCO listicle, and it's the same kind of thing, but instead of a man, it's a woman. So she's dressed in this beautiful sort of Korean garb, and just this horde on top of it. It's beautiful, and in the most horrific way.
That sequence has an awesome bit as well, where there's a zombie doing reverse dog.
Oh my god! I can't. Yes. I don't know how they
rotates,
do that.
Yeah. It rotates. Yes. And the legs. I don't know how they did it, because the legs look like they're still bending the right way, but the top is completely twisted around. And I think my notes just say, that's messed up. And actually, my notes just say, that's messed up a lot. But it works.
It does. It does. I don't, like you said, Bahia, I don't know if there is a season 3, but it feels like it is a franchise or a world that Netflix is invested in.
Mm.
And this feels very much like, not to lump Asian things together and be massively racist, but like, this is a kind of, you know, to use the Japanese term, gaiden. Like, this is like the side story. This is the five issue arc that sets up the villain of the next piece.
Exactly.
Yeah. This is very much a you know, it's giving backstory to someone you don't know. But I compare it off, like, I think to this is the Night King. This is the introduction to the Night King we never got in Game. Mm. We never got any explanation for the Night King in Game of Thrones. But this is like the first time you see him, and he's like, "Come at me, bro," to Jon.
Yes,
Jon.
Snow.
Forgotten his name. Biggest TV show in the world for a decade. Who? But you see that? It's like the next episode is just like, you know, and we would be annoyed if they did that, but it would be like, you know, about like who the Night King was, you know, how he lost his groove and how he got his groove back and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And that is a trope that works really well. And doing it in this section, they have to be doing a season 3 if they're doing this. This is not like you just set this thing up. And the way this ends, without going into any spoilers, is...
No, I was just going to say, the ending feels like a setup for season 3.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's... It doesn't feel like a setup for season 3. It feels like a setup for...
Oh, another story.
Kingdom, the story of Ashin kind of thing, right?
Oh, because I see.
Okay. I can see I can see that being time between this and season 1. Because season 2, there's an end, you know? Mm. Like, it's that thing of...
But is it the end of, and we're all safe now? Or is it, and we'll just have to deal with zombies for the rest of our lives?
No, it's that first one.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so they've literally put a full stop on it. You know, it's like...
But that doesn't have her involvement the way it does at the end of this, right?
No.
So maybe that's like, and then we all lived happily. Oh my God, my face, kind of thing, you know?
Maybe, yeah. No, but it, to me, it feels like that. It feels like that question of at the end of season Money Heist season one. Mm. Why are you going back into the bank?
Yeah.
You know, so it feels like they've closed the book. It's done. And okay. For them to come back to season three, I don't know how they would bring it back is my question.
That's it, though. This has made me like I dropped off and didn't catch up with season two. And I think it was just because I just didn't have time. There were so many other things to watch. It's made me want to go back and watch season two.
Yeah.
Like it Same, reminded
I
want to
watch me, it. I've never seen it.
Yeah, yeah. It's reminded me how much I enjoyed the show. So I want to go back and watch all of it. And you know, it's not an hour and a half an episode. So hey, and like,
oh, isn't
like
I was literally just going to no, ask, but not, I thought that'd be a bit
it's
worse.
Not, dude. You're good.
It's not. It's not. It's yeah, good. Yeah, it's yeah. not a full length motion picture. Every I think episode
it's a 40 minute,
40 to 50 minute. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, my girlfriend's been watching Hospital Playlist all week. There's only three episodes.
All right. Check out Kingdom Ashen of the North. You will not be disappointed, especially if you're a Kingdom fan. This really lives up to the standards of that series. And it helps that all the original creators and stuff are back. So they've really done a lot to build this world.
Also fans of Arrows and fans of Zombie Tigers and Jurassic World.
Yeah. Also, if you watch this... If you haven't seen the originals, then do watch this as well, because it's, I won't say there's no relation to the original, but there's no sort of big
right.
information dump that you need, right? This is
the same vibe, standalone. Right?
It's the same exactly vibe, absolutely the same vibe.
Yeah.
But it's a standalone story, so you don't need to have to watch the first two seasons to watch this one. So you can jump into this. Yeah,
yeah, it worked for me, but it's enough of a taster now that I'll go back in and watch the others.
All right, up next, we're going to be talking about Masters of the Universe Revelation, which is the brand new cartoon that just dropped on Netflix. It is by Kevin Smith, and it is a direct sequel to He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. I say direct sequel to that original cartoon because it kind of skips over... The New Adventures of He-Man, you know, when He-Man went into outer space.
I missed it. Wait, what? He went to outer space?
He got a nice pair of pants, right? He had a full yeah. length pair of pants with like stripes on the side. Lovely. I vaguely remember that.
New team, space battle, spaceships, all that stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which you know, kind of makes sense anyway. He just left Eternia. Anyway, and it skipped over the 2002 reboot as well. There was a reboot of the series.
Sure there was.
Yeah, and this one picks up right after, you know, 1985. We get the first five episodes in, I guess, what is part one of season one. Maybe the next five production was delayed because of COVID. We don't have a date for the last five episodes of the season. There are 10 episodes in the season. And it is absolutely tremendous. I was grinning from year to year while I was watching yeah. this show. There have been a lot of reboots and remakes of cartoons that we grew up with, and I think apart from a handful of them which were really excellent, most of them have been quite forgettable. I have not enjoyed a lot of them. I think She-Ra Netflix did a really good job with the reboot of My Little Pony has taken the world by storm and found a whole new generation of fans for that show. But the vast majority of stuff, like I did not like the Thundercats reboot, and God knows how many Transformers reboots there have been.
Which, because there's Thundercats Ho, which is the like squishy anime ones, and then there was one before that, which was the serious one, a bit more like parts of this He-Man.
That I liked. The squishy one, I know some people really love it, and I just felt it was, it kind of parodies itself a little too much. And as a fan of Thundercats, I was like, this rubs me the wrong way. Yeah, but what Kevin Smith has done with this, I mean, it is truly a, like he is passionate and dedicated to this cartoon that he's found out what makes these characters tick. Like, I don't know if you remember the original series, but it's pretty much the same thing for 130 episodes, right?
Despite the fact that we've been talking about the music for this show all week, I've had the theme from the old music running in my head all week for no reason.
Even though it's not really
like that's not in the show. Yeah, that's not in this show.
And he's kind of grown these characters. So when the first episode kicks off, and we're not going to tell you anything more about what happens in the first episode because it would really spoil the experience. And we can't. Right, according to the embargo letters. But when it kicks off, it's like immediately answers all of these questions I've had watching it as a kid. Like, why does Skeletor care so much about Castle Grayskull? Answered, Why doesn't Teela know about He-Man's secret? Answered.
No, but it's not just that. I think to go going back to what you just said just now, Umar, it's no longer an Adventure of the Week show. You know, these characters have backstory, they have history now, they have baggage, they have weight.
There are actual stakes.
Yeah, this is He-Man with all the restrictions of 1980s television removed. Like we've all seen the toys that made us, and what they did another documentary as well, right?
Oh, just about He-Man, yes.
Was it The Power of Grayskull? Is that what it's called?
I think that's on Netflix as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So they built out that, but there were restrictions at the time because you had just started being able to advertise to kids. So there were certain things like the Transformers, G.I. Joe, He-Man all had these things where no one, even the A-Team actually, no one could get hurt. You know, when a van flipped in the A-Team, you always saw the bad guys climb out the windows and scratch their heads. Like they just got an owie on their elbow from fucking flipping a truck 7,000 degrees. And in this, like, it was mandated. He-Man has a sword, but he can't hit anyone with it.
Yes.
He can't actually use his sword.
Yeah.
But also, like you said, Ian, those cartoons in the 80s were there to sell toys. They're not there to tell a story. They don't care about character growth or story arcs or drama or resolutions. They're just trying to tell a story.
That's it. I think inadvertently, they ended up having it because these guys hired some really good storytellers from Marvel to write comics about it. And suddenly they started developing these characters into real characters. And it kind of spilled over. I mean, it spilled over into the cartoons as well. I remember like there's episodes which kind of focus on Teela and where, you know, Teela takes on Skeletor by herself without He-Man's help. And, you know, it's quite a little empowering moment. Maybe they wanted to sell Teela action figures to girls, but you had a genuinely empowering moment in the cartoon as well.
Yeah, these people were, you know, selling their lives to corporate overlords, but they're like, well, I got to tell myself a nice story anyway. At least then it'll feel a little bit better. And whether they intentionally or not, they did have an impact. Like, if you look at the difference of the, what is all the Transformers toys called in Japan before they were Transformers? It's not Biometal or something like that, but there was a name for the Diacon, right? Yeah. They were Diacon toys. Mm. There was no story. They were just random toys you bought. No one's wearing t-shirts with Diacon logos on them except the super nerdy 50-year-olds at this point. But
yeah,
Optimus Prime and the stories they built around those, and it's the same with He-Man, this elemental, you know, eternal battle story, stuck with us. And what's really amazing, did you notice as well in this first episode, they tried to homage like the old show. The first episode feels like an episode of the old show plus. And then from there onwards, it goes, hello, welcome to modern day storytelling. And it actually goes through developing these characters and reacting on them. I was amazed. The opening narration of the story.
Oh, had my hair standing on end, man.
They do a painterly style, which do you guys know? I think that's modeled after the comic books that used to come with the toys, which were a different story originally. Yes.
The famous, I think there's one scene where he's riding Battle Cat, and that's from directly like an homage to a scene in the comic book.
It was all this kind of like Frank Frazetta style art. And these are the comic books, but it was before the cartoon came out, and it was a completely different story, apparently. And they do that. I can't believe they did this, but it's like there's the Bashosaurus, which is one of the villain weapons.
Yes,
in the first episode.
The giant ball.
The one with the giant ball. You only see it from the side. Like, they drive into frame in side profile, which is something I didn't realize. They did that on the old show a lot when people were on their sky bikes or in the vehicles. It's just like, do you know how hard it is to draw something rotating in 3D, in the 3D space? Yeah. It's just like, I'm going to draw it from the side and just like animate their lips badly. Or we'll reuse the lips from last episode. And the fact that they did that and then build on top of that really shows. Like, I do wonder, is that going to put kids off? Like, this isn't made for kids anyway, but it's made for us, basically. But I wonder, will that put kids off, do you think? If they watch it and go like, why is it so weird and static, and then not get to the second episode? Because, you know, attention spans are so short these days, right?
Yeah, but the dads will watch it into the second episode. Yeah. So the kids will have to sit down and watch that. So that's their problem.
I don't know. I think it's interesting enough, though. I think there's enough mythology. I think that's the thing that I loved about He-Man always, was that it blended the fantasy stuff with the sci-fi stuff.
And it made no sense whatsoever.
No, who cares?
No.
Yeah.
lasers and magic.
Got the medieval swords and stuff, but Man at Arms will still be firing lasers out of his hand, and there would be magic, and then robots, and I'm like, what is going on? Who cares? It's great.
Cyborgs and stuff. Yeah. You're right.
And I think
right,
I kind of loved that about He-Man, and this one really, like, it really doubles down on all of that. I like that Kevin Smith and gang leaned into it and didn't try to play it straight in any way. You know, you have Mossman, you have a cyborg, you have wizards and Orko and...
You mean cyborg, you mean Roboto. I had a Roboto.
You had a Roboto?
Roboto, yeah, I had a Roboto. He was wicked.
I never had a Roboto. I never had a Castle Grayskull. I always wanted a Castle Grayskull.
Oh, my cousin had a Castle Grayskull. Yeah, that was so much
Castle
fun.
Castle Grayskull, right?
Yeah. Oh, man. No, it's such a cheap piece of plastic as well. But
it is.
So good.
If you look at pictures now, it looks awful.
I've played with it, dude. I know what it's made of.
But also there was an Eternia set that we could never find in Malaysia.
Oh, I never... I
only saw those in the toy booklets that you get. And that was like an Eternia set.
Oh, man, I love those toy booklets.
Oh, yeah. No, the other thing which I was... I wrote a review on the site, and I was talking about how Masters of the Universe feels like the first one of these reboot reimagining sequels that is made by people who were playing with these things as toys. Like, it feels like those extension, like, I think that was the inadvertent consequence of the commercialism of these series, right? We'd have the toys, and then we'd create our own stories in Optimus Prime, teaming up with Starscream to go do something. And, you know, we'd continue the story after the episode had ended. And this is what it feels like. This is someone going, oh, look, what if Teela was Man at Arms? What if Teela was this? Or what happens if this guy grew old? And
this is the 20 something coming home to his parents' house, finding the toys in the attic, and then accidentally spending the rest of the day playing with them and writing fanfic.
Exactly. But it's the best kind of fanfic because it's incredibly well written as well. I mean, when I'm watching the episodes, and I love the way, like I said, we don't want to spoil anything, but I love the way they would splice in flashbacks and use it as a way to kind of build character and talk about characters' pasts and motivations.
There's a great joke with Hamill's Skeletor just talking about changing the color of the ship just to match his paint scheme. That it just like cracked me up. Did you hear him say that?
I can't remember.
No, Skeletor standing on the deck of his ship, and he's like, and there's like, it's just like, it's like as the scene begins, he's just like, what if we painted the ship a nice gray?
Yeah.
Oh, is that?
It's just out of nowhere.
No, I got that. I didn't get the reference. I didn't understand what.
It's the kind of thing like they added like what does Skeletor do in his off moments? It's like he can't always be curses you, He-Man.
Yeah.
You know, there's someone I follow on Twitter which is just like, I don't know if it's Asshole Skeletor or something like that, but it's just a character account where he's just giving out about stuff all the time, mostly He-Man, and it's great. But just those little extra details added so much more. Of course, it's like he has a thing. Of course he'd want the ship to match Skeletor's brand. You know what I mean?
And speaking of that, I think if you're a fan of the series and if you've seen episodes of He-Man, there's plenty of stuff for you. Like you said, the Bashastaurus is there. There's loads of Easter eggs. All of the flying vehicles are around. And yeah, you're going to get a lot more out of it.
What the hell were those bird things? I couldn't remember. They looked familiar, but I didn't know what they were. The bird things that were chasing them in Snake Mountain?
Oh, yes. Shall I check out my giant reference book?
Go for it.
Wait, there are two of them. This one is every episode of He-Man and She-Ra. And then this one lists, you see how thick it is, every toy ever made.
Oh, man.
There was a lot of garbage that they wanted us to spend money on, people.
You know, I feel fully secure in that I'm on a podcast talking about TV shows and toys and movies and stuff, and I feel perfectly secure in saying, nerd!
See, you only cross the nerd boundary in the 21st century when you buy the book.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Oh, no, you buy it when you two both books?
Both books. Far. Yeah.
Too far.
Too much.
You stopped at one.
I didn't know what those were. But yeah, those little small things were like things I didn't even remember cropping up or just seeing the natural evolution, I guess, of Triclops and Lockjaw, where they end up is wild.
And makes perfect
but it makes
sense.
Perfect sense. Yeah. And you just know that there was a point in the writer's room when whenever they came up with you know, with this group with Liv and Diode. They just like, that's it, guys. We're done for the day. Let's go get some beers. We Liv and Diode for these like robot guys. It's going to work perfectly.
I will say there's, I don't have the kind of attachment to the series as you guys do, because it came out in 85. It probably reached here 86, Uma?
Yeah, it came out in 83. I think it only reached here about 85, 86, 87.
Right, okay. Yeah. So I was only about 2 years old, so there's not a lot of it that I don't remember watching any episodes, but I had a lot of the toys. Right. So my attachment to it is absolutely just the toys. And it's something that you mentioned, Uma, about how we made our own stories, right? We had Castle Grayskull. We obviously had He-Man. We had these characters as toys in our imaginary toy box. So watching this show, now suddenly getting all these backstory, all this baggage, all this character development, is crazy.
So you didn't know Triclops is a villain, huh?
Hey,
my hero.
I like that guy. But yeah, no, I think that's really magical about the show.
The original voice of Skeletor is Mossman.
Yes, and the stuff they do with Mossman, like, we're legally prohibited from talking about it, but it's wild where they go with that. And then when it comes back around later, you're like, I'm going to cry. You know, there's just like these very touching, it has these incredibly touching moments.
But you're right. I did not expect this to be as emotional as it was. Like, I loved the She-Ra and the Princesses of Power, but it was, I wasn't as emotionally attached to that series. And this one I thought,
and that was much more of a reboot as well. Whereas this is literally
that was starting from
the day after.
Yeah.
Oh, we should probably mention as well. I think I heard from somebody, but I think there were people wondering when the trailer came out, was this the Teela show? And I think there's an element of that in the later episodes, in that she is put front and center with Eva Lynn and Lena Headey. Lena Headey is. We should probably talk about the voice cast a little bit, because
the voice cast is super stacked.
Yeah, and it's super stacked with like people that like Kevin Smith loves and has worked with.
Yeah.
Like it's not just that Jason Mewes' Stinkor, you know, that, or they got Kevin Conroy because he loves Kevin Conroy.
Exactly. Yeah.
He's had him on his podcast. But putting Kevin Conroy as Merman is a stroke of genius. It changes that character completely. Like, it just gives it a whole different tone, whereas himself and Beastman were the sniveling henchmen in the original show. Like, they were the stars. They were just Starscream and his friends.
Yeah.
But in this, there's a threat to him. You know what I mean? Mm. When he turns up in the X years later section, it's like Aquaman in DC Comics. It's like, whoa, Merman's a badass.
Yes.
Never thought I'd hear those words coming out of my mouth. Sorry.
And Beastman's great as well. Suddenly he has personality and, you know, this unflinching dedication to Eva Lynn, which is absolutely just fantastic storytelling. But yeah, you're right. The voice cast, Mark Hamill, man, is tremendous as Skeletor.
Yeah, he manages to give it enough of a difference from the original show,
but
it's
still
not
familiar.
Just doing the vocal. Yeah, it's not doing the Joker. Like,
and just going back to what you were saying about the Teela show, and I think it's, I think it's more of an ensemble piece. And when we look back, even at the original cartoons, there was an ensemble feel to it, right? Because it wasn't just every episode of Voltron where once the sword comes out, you know they've won. So once He-Man appears, they haven't necessarily won and the episode isn't necessarily over. There was a lot more to it than that, right? And so I think it is, I don't think people will be disappointed on that front. I think if you were a fan of the series, you will know what to expect.
Yeah, and I think it's a very clever thing to do, because when, you know, What's that jokey trope they have? Whenever He-Man's not on screen, the audience should be saying, "Where's He-Man?"
Right.
You know, that joke that they talk about. And this manages to do that without, you know, ruining things. And I'm annoyed we don't have the rest of Ted Lasso and the rest of He-Man now. It's just like, I was totally getting into this and I don't care about watching it weekly or binging. Is it only 5 come out tomorrow, or is it all 10?
No, only 5. Although I believe this weekend during Comic-Con at home, I think there's a panel. There's a He-Man. Mm. There's a Master Universe Revelation panel. So I don't know if they're going to announce the date for the second part. But at the moment, we've only got 5 to play with.
Well, even if they don't, we'll hear it on Fat Man on Batman on Monday whenever they're done sucking Kevin's cough get the,
yeah.
on the show.
But also, wait, yeah, before we stop, before we wrap, hold on. The music is so good, right?
Music's great.
I thought I would be annoyed that they didn't have the original theme song. And I realized that only when a show is shit, I get pissed off when they don't have the original theme song. So, you know, when I'm watching MacGyver on CBS, I'm still singing the MacGyver song in my head, even though it never gets played on screen. Don't ask. But it's guilty pleasure.
Yeah, that, is on. That still no, on?
Finished. They wrapped. The season's over.
The first time He-Man pulls out the sword. And the first time, Prince Adam, sorry to ruin it for people. Spoilers. But
that electric guitar.
That first time. Ooh.
I was just blown away that I'm listening to the beginning of the show and it's like, is that Liam Cunningham? Is that the Onion Knight? What? Is he in everything now? And it's like, okay, it's him. Yeah, cool.
That narration at the opening. Oh, goosebumps. Oof. So good.
Great. Yeah.
So good.
Yeah, the music's great. But I think as well, we should say that like that doesn't, I think we shouldn't spoil it, but there are lines in here that are genius.
Oh, so
like there
funny.
Are some lines that are so good. And so there's funny lines, but there's also like Eva Lynn, like she would have her own Trisha style TV show. She's just dropping truth bombs on everybody about the dangers of going out with like scary but sexy men with skulls for faces, or like, you know, putting yourself first in a relationship. There's a moment with Orko where he's telling Ardra, who's the new character, right? Totally new. Yeah. And he's talking about like eight. Like, I mean, it's Kevin Smith. If you listen to any of his podcasts, you hear this stuff all the time because he's just like, he's always rolling a tear over shit that reminds him of his youth. Clerks 3 is coming out now, apparently, again.
Mm-hmm.
But there's the thing about like, you know, I don't remember most of my hero days. Keeping a journal. It's like, it's this weird mix of a He-Man and like self-help book.
Yeah.
But like, it's the good parts. Like, I'm like, I've heard, you know, journaling can be good. It can be good for you. And it's good to look back on those things. Somehow hearing it from a troll and wizard makes it just hit all the harder.
A troll and wizard from your childhood.
I never knew he was a troll.
Neither did I.
Oh.
Which I think also kind of was an interesting way to bring in the morals at the end of every original episode of the series.
Yeah, but these are less morals and they're more like, you know, lessons, life lessons for adults. It's like a TED talk.
No, mate.
It's an actual TED
but
talk.
But watch
properly.
Those original shows. They were life lessons for adults as well.
No, but these are truth bombs. You know, these are actual. There's no eye rolling here. No, you know, like in the originals. You know, I've looked at clips and it's just like
I will give you.
You kind of roll your eyes at the end of it. Okay, Pull up the first episode.
Oh, the first episode. Okay, hold on.
Pull up the first episode.
Let's check out the book. The first episode. Okay, so this was not. This was the first episode that was produced, but not the first episode that was aired. Okay. So,
oh, okay.
This looks like bloody story time with him on the live stream.
Are we sitting comfortable?
Tonight,
are we sitting comfortably?
On Masterpiece Theater. The moral from the Cosmic Comet, Man at Arms, is, in today's story, Zagras had a problem. He lost his confidence in himself because he had once failed. Well, now we all fail sometimes, but we should never be afraid to try again. And we should always keep believing in ourselves. As the old saying goes, if at first you don't succeed, try again. Until later. Bye-bye.
Who's Zagras?
Zagras was the wizard who was controlling the comet and it got out of hand. And then Skeletor wanted the power of this comet. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Cool.
But we should say as well, the characters that don't turn up. I mean, apart from getting Fisto and Ram Man in the opening bits, it's like the opening kind of setup stuff. I always love to see more Fisto. And Ram Man is a classic. I think he's great as well. What's the guy with all the faces? It's not Triclops. It's like, it's the same gimmick. It's just inside and it's faces instead of eyes.
Because they had the same model for the toy.
Maybe. I mean, they were all the same model.
That's
for
true.
The toy.
Yeah.
They were all the same body. So I can see the toys that made us He-Man popping into Netflix's top 10 over the weekend after this.
I remember watching the Ram-Man episode from the original series and his moral was the best. Basically, kids, don't go around ramming people like I do.
Pretty straightforward. There's no room for
it. And it also works as an adult.
No, you're right. Yeah.
In the corporate boardroom room or in the bedroom?
Hey.
Heyo.
All right, folks. Masters of the Universe Revelation is now streaming on Netflix. Be sure to check it out. When you do, don't forget to reach out to us and tell us how much you love it. We promise you will not be disappointed by either of the shows that we've spoken about today. Let us know. You can reach out on all of our social media feeds. That's GogglerMY. You can email us on podcast@goggler.my. You can reach out on the Goggler hotline as well. That's 012-524-5208. Just a shout out very quickly to Jagdish, who reached out on the Goggler hotline. Apparently, we convinced his 9-year-old kid to watch Fear Street. And because she listens to the podcast with him, and when we mentioned Stranger Things, she got very excited because she's a fan of Stranger Things. I apologize for all the bad language, but he said...
Oh, sugar. We never realized that.
But he said, don't worry about it, mate. There's a lot of cursing in my house too. So.
Well, I mean, that aside, if your 9-year-old child is listening to this...
9-year-old, like, so this is the same... When He-Man came out, Aliens came out at the same time. And I don't know if we were around the same age and we caught that. So I don't know.
Well, I don't think you were supposed to catch that, but...
No, I mean, I definitely was 13 when I saw RoboCop, I think. I wasn't supposed to be paying attention, but...
But apparently there were no nightmares. He checked in the morning after and they had binged all 3 movies. So there you go.
Yeah.
Cool, cool.
Well, that's good. Because the first time I saw Aliens, I didn't sleep for days.
Yeah, pretty much.
Good times.
All right, folks. So reach out. Let us know how you feel about all of these shows. Thank you so much for listening. This has been the Goggler Podcast.